Hello and welcome to the Spooktator podcast. This is the podcast which examines the stranger elements of life, society, international culture and the media. My name is Hayley Stevens and my co-hosts are Charlie Revel-Smith and Paul Gannon.
Hello everyone.
How do?
So, who are you?
How rude.
After all this time, you still don't know.
I know, right? So rude.
Well, I am Charlie Smith, or also known as Charlie Revel-Smith, which is my pen name because there are too many Charlie Smiths in the world. I am an author of several books, lots of historic fiction, mostly historic mystery books, and also a series of more modern books called The Bristol Murders. And I also do the Weird Bristol Twitter feed and also the Instagram feed as well.
And I am Paul Gannon. I am I guess more of a podcaster now than I used to be a comedian. Some people argue I was never a comedian, but that's a different discussion. I do a show called Cheap Show, where me and my co-host go to charity shops and we investigate bargain bins and thrift stores and try and find fun things on a budget. And I also have a YouTube channel called Bartians, where men in their 40s act like 18-year-olds and embarrass themselves for the good of the public viewing figures. That's me.
I absolutely love Bartians, by the way.
Why?
It's hilarious.
Why?
It's funny.
You're just encouraging us.
Yeah. I don't think you need any encouraging, really.
No, not at all, really.
I'm Hayley. I am a ghost researcher who goes in when people think they've seen a ghost to try and work out what's going on. I've got a blog called Hayley is a Ghost. I'm studying for a degree in psychology, and the Times once described me as the Scully end of the X-Files spectrum. So that's who we are. In this episode, we'll be discussing our latest listener feedback, Sally Morgan in the Celebrity Big Brother house, and the latest Bigfoot news. So without further ado, let's get into it. One of our lovely listeners has written into us, guys. Paulo, I think it's Paulo. I hope it's not Paolo. It's written P-A-U-L-O, so I'm guessing it's Paulo.
Maybe he's Australian.
Yeah.
Paulo, g'day.
Paulo writes, "Hi, I've been listening to the cast since Hayley's first appearance on Monster Talk. New one's spot on too. Good job keeping Blake on track." That's a reference to the fact that I was recently on the Monster Talk podcast. I joined them to talk about prison ghosts, and I'll put a link on the episode notes. But
don't
anyway,
talk about
back
prison
to
ghosts
the...
with us.
I just do saying. Actually.
Just say that do. Sounds like fun. You don't talk with it with us. It's just a bit like you've, I don't know, going over our heads there. Just a bit upset about that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
So Paulo says, "I was wondering about your take on something from Most Haunted. I agree it's a crock of shit, but are you aware of them ever using CGI? There's one episode where they're arsing it about in an old courthouse somewhere in the southeast, in Exeter, I think, and they're down in the jail bit underneath, and the whole crew absolutely lose it and run as this thing comes towards them down the corridor. Now, that's not new for them, but if you slow the footage, there's this really weird looking face that appears in some of the feedback caught on the camera. It's really sinister and they mention absolutely nothing about it. What's your take on it?" Now, I haven't seen this. Have you guys seen this?
I haven't seen this episode, no.
No, I'd have to know exactly whether it was the early batch or the later batch that they've been doing, because there's been when they came back to UK Living after that time off, the show did change in a weird fundamental way, and I'm wondering if that was when they got a little bit more prankstery, you know, and they started pushing the fact that they were faking stuff more. But I would also say, okay, this is going to sound really snobby, I don't think they're that smart. I don't think they're that savvy enough to do a trick like that, because it seems to me most of the stuff they've done in the past has been very old camera trick text, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like the what they call in-camera tricks, isn't it? It's like the really simple kind of stuff which you can do on the set, you know, really, really straightforward, basic stuff.
It's like, what was that? There was one they made a big fuss about maybe a year or so ago, where they, like, there was a camera shot of, like, feet walking down steps in some old, it's always old places, but, you know, in some kind of cellar or hallway. It's like also the episode where they caught a door slamming and things, and I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when Paulo or Paolo, I really hope we're getting your name right.
I hope we're getting it wrong. It's going to annoy him.
when he wrote in, I initially thought that he meant the Wentworth Woodhouse episode in South Yorkshire, where they, I think that's what you're talking about, Paul, where I think Carl and Stuart are going down like a corridor.
Yeah.
And then they look ahead and they see something going up the stairs and they just freak out and run. And that one in particular, there were two theories being knocked about by people. One was that it was just a member of the crew actually walking up the steps, while Rob Lee of the Null Hypothesis blog actually suggested that it was an overlay transposed onto the video, and he laid out his argument there.
Mm.
I think I agree with you, Charlie, when you mentioned how sometimes it's just something a bit simpler, something, you know, a little basic trick rather than something complex. I think
with that episode you were talking about, I don't think there needs to be any camera trickery involved at all. I think that was just a member of the crew walking around. I don't think there was anything more to it than that.
It's interesting that he says in the letter, though, that that the CGI or whatever effects he thinks he's seeing are within, like, fuzzy edits, which would mean it'd have to be slightly more subliminal, therefore a little bit more effort. And again, I don't think they're that clever.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, as people who are sceptical or people who take a more scientific or rational approach to these sorts of claims, it can be really easy to give too much credit to the people that you're trying to debunk, for want of a better word.
Mm.
Because actually, more often than not, when it comes to hoaxes and fraudulent photographs and videos and stuff, yeah, it's just basic stuff. You can create effects with a bit of string better than you could the same effects using CGI, which actually, unless you really know what you're doing, can look a bit clumpy and a bit amateur. There's a really good YouTube channel called Captain Disillusion, and I got to see him speak at QEDCon a few years ago. And he takes apart videos and shows how people use special effects and actually aren't that good at it to try and create hoax videos, and how to the trained eye it's really obvious, and in some cases to the untrained eye it's really obvious. And I think people who've been listening to the Spooktator for a while, or just people who kind of browse ghost news stories or blogs that talk about ghost news stories, will be very familiar with the numerous hoaxes out there where people use fishing wire and hide behind a door or just off of camera to make things fall off of shelves and so on. And I think those sorts of hoaxes are a lot more effective than the ones that are generated through computer graphics and so on.
Yeah.
Also, though, you've got to remember that Most Haunted love being talked about. So
yeah,
it seems to me that actually this kind of thing would be in their alley in some respects, because then all it takes is one BDI person to go, oh, look, fake, and they're in the discussion again. It's like, you know, they're part of that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the long run, they don't care if people are watching it and believing it or not. All they really care about is that people are watching it.
Yeah. And apparently they still are.
Yes.
Talking about the hoaxes people make with fishing wire and stuff, did you guys see that hashtag recently on Twitter where people were recreating the scene out of Matilda?
No.
I can't remember what the hashtag actually was, because I'm really bad and I'm just doing this off the top of my head. I follow Mara Wilson on Twitter. I recommend anyone does who's got a Twitter account. And she was retweeting all of these tweets where people had filmed themselves recreating that scene in the Matilda movie where she's in the living room and she's making objects fly around.
Oh, she's like conducting them, like, yeah to get all the things.
When she's kind of, first exploring her powers. And yeah, so people were recreating that using fishing wire and people hit behind the curtains and stuff. And it was really interesting to see it being used in a theatrical way rather than...
Oh, I'm going to have to look for some of those.
Yeah.
Have, just as like a little aside, have either of you seen Matilda the musical?
No.
By any chance? Because it was written by Tim Minchin, did the music for it. And it was very interesting how, because it was written so much with him behind the scenes, it plays down the supernatural element so much that it becomes... there is virtually no part of the story anymore. It was very interesting seeing it... how much it just makes it her superpower just be her intelligence rather than it being something supernatural. And I thought that was a very interesting take on it. It's a lovely, lovely musical. So really, really sweet.
I would like to see it. I think I've heard some great things about it. The hashtag, by the way, was hashtag Matilda Challenge. I've just found it. And if you look that up on Twitter, you'll see loads of people doing the Matilda Challenge. Some better than others. But, you know, it's all, you know, in the spirit of trying, I suppose. So if you've got a question, a comment or a suggestion, remember that you can get in touch with us by emailing spooktater@gmail.com. If you send abusive messages, though, be warned that we will sign you up to your local psychic newsletter service, and those things are difficult to unsubscribe from.
For this episode, I've been watching Celebrity Big Brother, and I have no shame in saying this. I do enjoy a bit of trash culture, and there is no culture trashier than Big Brother in any iteration. Anybody who doesn't know somehow what Celebrity Big Brother is, it's exactly the same as the regular Big Brother, as you would imagine. It's a reality TV show where around about a dozen celebrities, and it's the loosest definition of celebrity that you can imagine, move into a house which is under 24-hour video surveillance. And as the weeks go by, the public eliminate them one by one until only one remains who is declared the winner. And astonishingly, I couldn't believe this. This is the 22nd series of Celebrity Big Brother, which is...
22nd!
I know. It's just mind, absolutely mind-blowing.
That makes me want to cry.
Just actually, what I found just hilarious about this series, and this is just as an aside, the whole theme of this series has been built around storms, and it's called like Big Brother, the Eye of the Storm. And this was all in preparation, and you know, all of the advertising was about how a storm is coming to Britain. And this was all because Stormy Daniels was supposed to be taking part in the show. But at the very last minute, she dropped out, which just means it's utterly bizarre that there was this whole like White House set that they had built in there, and there's no explanation for it whatsoever. It's just like, yep, that's there. That's just the thing. Of the 12 celebrities who went into the house this year, I'd only actually heard of four of them. So it was the American actor Kirstie Alley, the comedian Hardeep Singh Kohli, Nick Leeson, who was the guy who brought down Barings Bank about, well, ages ago. And as we just about alluded to on the last episode, Sally Morgan was among them, which is supposedly Britain's favourite psychic, as she would like to be known.
Britain's most feared psychic, I would argue.
Britain's most litigious psychic. She's actually not the first supposed psychic to appear on Celebrity Big Brother. Last year, Derek Acora took part and he ended up in fourth place. He made it to the end. Now, as we record this show, she's actually up for eviction this evening. So by the time we finish recording, she could actually already been given the boot. But I have been watching the show, and I've been studying her especially. So I thought I'd give an overview of some of the claims she'd made in the house. None of them were actually quite as outrageous as I hoped they would be, but there were some of them a little alarming. Her first prediction was on the very first night, where she claimed that a woman would walk. Now, this is terminology for walk, meaning anybody who leaves the show before being evicted or, you know, making it through to the end, that they would leave voluntarily.
Yeah.
And she was actually right in this prediction, because on day 17, Emmerdale actress Roxanne Pallett left the house of her own accord.
Scandal.
Yes, which was all mired in scandal, and which actually seems to still be going on now at the moment. Now, Sally Morgan actually claimed this was proof of her abilities, but I'd suggest that predicting someone will leave the Celebrity Big Brother house voluntarily is about as surefire prediction as you can ever make on a... It's like predicting someone will get naked in the hot tub or, you know, have a fight about someone snoring. It is that... Sally Morgan was actually only asked for a demonstration of her psychic reading abilities by her other housemate on the third night. And it's here that I think things got a little bit uncomfortable for me. Most of the stuff which she came up with, you could easily be found online just by Googling people. It's no secret at all who is going to go into the Big Brother house. They try and claim that it is, but it's very well known ahead, you know, essentially for the tabloids to promote it. Who is going in, who isn't, what such and such a person has done. And it doesn't take a genius to potentially do a little bit of research, not implying that this is what has happened at all, of course. For instance, in her reading of the previously mentioned Roxanne Pallett, she told her that she'd once considered changing her name. And I don't find that remarkable in the slightest that an actor would consider changing their name. It's a very standard thing for actors to do. Sometimes you actually have to do it involuntarily if there's actually somebody else who is already working under that name. So
Roxanne Pallett isn't her real name?
No, that actually is. But so her reading was that she'd once considered changing her name, which, to be honest, is probably true of about 90% of people.
Yeah.
Generally, as I mentioned earlier, I have changed my name for writing purposes because there are too many Charlie Smiths out there and no one could ever find me. It is certainly not a stretch at all to imagine that somebody would change their name at some point.
She might want to change her name now, maybe.
Yes, she certainly might want to change her name and identity and country of residence as well.
For any non-UK listeners, we're alluding to the fact that Roxanne Pallett left the Big Brother house after accusing a fellow contestant of punching her, when in reality he was sort of
kicking her in the face.
Kicking her in the face. Airboxing. And she made a very big deal out of it and has received very harsh feedback as a result, and has been kind of paraded through the media in this country and on television and had to make grovelling apologies.
Yes, I mean, I would not making excuses for Roxanne at all, because what she did was genuinely just astonishingly distasteful. Yeah. But there's nothing the British like seeing more than a woman being torn to shreds through the media. We
public
do enjoy
shaming.
It.
Yeah.
Yep, we absolutely love it. So anyway, more troubling was Ben Jardine, who was famous for appearing on Married at First Sight, where he literally married somebody the first time that he met her. The marriage didn't last, incidentally.
Oh, really?
But she told him that a friend of his who'd fallen out of the fifth floor window of a building and had barely survived didn't do it by accident and was actually attempting to kill himself.
Wow.
Now, I found, and as you can imagine, he was devastated to hear this. Now, I don't know how, because this is such a minor celebrity, I don't know how much of his life would actually be available to find information online about him. But however she managed to come up with this information, there is something really ethically dubious about not just telling somebody that generally, but doing it in a public forum where you know you're being broadcast to the outside world. You know, it's poor taste for several reasons, not just the unnecessary trauma. Because, to be honest, even if that was true, I don't think that there is any need to have told him about it.
No. I think unless he had raise the subject himself, then maybe you're forced to have a discussion about it. But yeah, certainly not like that.
Yes. And of course, there is always the issue with all reality TV. There's always an issue of editing. Was he discussing this incident earlier and she managed to overhear it?
Has she got an earpiece? That's the question I have.
But I also thought it was completely slanderous to whoever she was talking about. Imagine if this guy on the outside, and whether it was a suicide bid or not, it still was likely to be something that you want to keep to yourself. And do you warrant actually having that exposed publicly? It's a very, very private thing. And this guy, whoever he is, hasn't volunteered to be part of Big Brother. You know, he didn't want his life to be put out there. And of course, she didn't use names or anything like that. But there would be enough information there to know who she was talking about. Now, aside from all of that, she has actually come across fairly well in the house. She has a bit of a mean edge to her sometimes. But she has this sort of maternal, caring air to her. And she's also proven to be quite insightful in ways that aren't necessarily psychic. And I think that if psychics do actually have any powers whatsoever, I think that it is this ability to actually read people. And I think that's essentially what cold reading is. You're able to assess somebody and pull out bits of information about what kind of person that they are. You know, you pick up subtle hints. You're generally quite intuitive. And if we can say that psychics actually do have discernible powers, that's probably what I would opt for it being more likely. Now, her biggest challenge came, it was just a few days ago, when she was set a task involving 12 boxes. And this might actually be a little bit difficult to explain, but essentially of these 12 boxes, 8 of them had letters from home. There was 8 contestants, including Sally Morgan. And in 8 of the 12 boxes, there were letters from friends, family members, that sort of thing, which is a very standard thing for reality TV, the whole letters from home, everyone cries, it's classic TV. But also inside 4 of them were red crosses indicating that she had failed in deducing that there was a letter in that box. Now, she was challenged to find all 8 letters for the remaining housemates, including herself. But if she found 3 of the 4 crosses, she'd lose all of the letters she'd found that far. So at any point, she could actually stop and say, "No, I've collected enough letters. We will, we'll just do with this lot." At one point, she had found 4 letters and 2 red crosses. And despite her housemates telling her to stop, essentially, she went for a 7th box, which also turned out to be a red cross. So she actually managed to find 3 out of the 4 red crosses and do quite significantly worse than just chance would allow. So she actually ended up losing the letters for everyone. But because it's reality TV and you still need that bit where everyone cried, they got their letters in the end anyway. So we had that anyway. So she put it down to nerves.
It's like, she's a psychic. Doesn't mean she has to win Deal or No Deal. She could theoretically go, "I'm a psychic. I don't pick letters out of a box." You know what I mean? It's like,
well, this is the thing that I've often wondered about psychic powers, because it's so often psychics, clairvoyants, mediums are expected to be able to talk to ghosts, read people's minds and predict the future as well. And they feel like they should all be very, very separate things, especially the predicting the future aspect of it. Because you can do one, why would you be able to do the other? But seemingly a lot of psychics claim to be able to do the whole lot. There were a couple of other things which she did in the house. I mean, she claimed to have seen a dog running about, the ghost of a dog. I believe Derek Acora at some point also claimed that
the
Big Brother house was haunted as well.
Oh, I thought you said she saw the spirit of Derek Acora. I was going to say, that's interesting.
he's not dead, Charlie.
inside he is.
Yeah. It's kind of tragic in a way, if you think about it from a certain kind of perspective. Because Sally Morgan is probably one of the older contestants in the house, I'm guessing. I haven't watched any of it. So in a way, she is just an old lady sat on the sofa going, "I can see a dog." And in a lot of cases, you would actually feel great pity for that person and possibly seek help for them.
Now, there are plenty of reasons why Sally Morgan might be in the house. There is at least a persistent rumour that there might be a few issues with tax not being paid in the past. I don't know if this is true or not, but generally the number one reason for going into the Big Brother house is to increase your exposure and also give your career a bit of a boost, usually if it's been...
And money.
Not that is very best. And of course, there is the immediate thing about, yes, you do get paid to take part, and you get a bit of extra if you win as well. But judging by her performance, I can't see her managing to win over any new believers at all.
So what is your prediction about eviction tonight?
I think that she is probably going to go. She is up against Hardeep Singh Kohli, who for some reason just seems to be unsinkable. I think that just because she hasn't done much, really, I think she'll probably be gone. And I think that the winner will probably be Ryan Thomas.
Am I right in thinking, though, that Hardeep and Sally have got a bit of a feud going on?
Yeah, they did. And it seems to have just started from a discussion over... Hardeep Singh Kohli is Scottish, and they just a discussion over Scottish independence. That seemed to be all it was. They just had a big falling out and haven't really been cordial at all to each other since then.
Well, she should have seen that coming.
Ba-dum.
I was just waiting the whole story.
I refuse to acknowledge that.
Well, it had to be said, didn't it?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, You should have seen it coming too.
I know, and I didn't, because I'm not psychic. I don't know. I'm just very in touch with my intuition.
Well, you say that, but what listeners don't know is that before we started recording, we were having a chat over our microphones, and you were eating some food, and I knew what food you were eating just by hearing it. So maybe we do all have psychic connections. I don't know.
Like when I told Charlie that to watch Demon House by showing him a trailer for something that he was already watching at the exact same time.
I know, yes.
Da-da-da-da.
The thing with Sally Morgan, even if she doesn't go very far, like if she is evicted tonight or maybe on the next eviction, whatever, even if she doesn't win, when she comes out of the show, I'm guessing that she's going to start doing maybe tours again. The thing is, though, she's really bad. That's the thing. She's really, really bad.
I was reading about, on one of her tours, her accidentally speaking to the ghost of a woman who was still alive and in the audience by mistake.
Yes, this was basically, she does a segment of her show where when you go along, you're encouraged to take a photograph of somebody that you want her to communicate with. So you would take a picture of your dead nan or, you know, your best friend who died in a car crash, but you put it in a bowl or a box or something. And then during the show, she picks one out at random and then she does a reading or connects to that person and does a reading for you. And the audience member in question hadn't quite understood the instructions and had put a photograph of herself in the box saying that she wanted a reading. You know, she'd taken it to mean that that's what you had to do. So Sally Morgan pulls a photograph out of the box and starts doing a reading for this woman, not realising that it's the woman that she's talking to.
Imagine if she had been. It'd been like The Sixth Sense, where she hadn't known she'd died. It only took that live show for her to realise.
Oh, yeah. The BBC recently reported that a chap called Todd Standing failed to get the British Columbia Supreme Court to rule that Bigfoot was, and I quote, an indigenous mammal living within British Columbia. Standing claimed that British Columbia had failed in its duty to recognise that Sasquatches exist. And Justice Kenneth Ball found no reasonable cause for the lawsuit and said the court had no power to compel the province to conduct scientific investigations of its flora or fauna. Though I'm not entirely sure that Bigfoot would fall under that definition, but okay. Standing said he could prove the existence of Sasquatches way beyond a reasonable doubt, with help in part from police officers, engineers, doctors and other professionals who would claim to have seen Sasquatch-like creatures firsthand. The hearing was held on whether the matter should go to trial, and lawyers for the province argued that the lawsuit was lacking an air of reality. No shit. and that the lawsuit made claims that could not be proven and should not proceed further. And they were right. And now Todd Standing has to foot the bill for all of the legal costs, which is a bit of a shame for him.
I bet that's not an insignificant amount either.
Bigfoot is one of my favourite cryptids. My mum and I used to spend hours binge-watching Finding Bigfoot, and it was great fun, but was in no way a factual show. And although the stars of the show, such as Matt Moneymaker, might argue differently, there really is no evidence that such a creature exists. That doesn't stop us humans from having really important and deep considerations about Bigfoot, though. Not only if he... I don't know, is it a he or an it? Not only if
they,
it,
I guess, because there are multiples, yes, of them, I guess.
Gender neutral, I like it. Not only if they should be classified as an existing species, such as in the Todd Standing case, but also what should be done if Bigfoot were to be discovered after all. Now, Gizmodo recently published a great article by Jennings Brown titled To Kill or to Capture Bigfoot, The Great Cryptozoological Debate, in which another Bigfoot head honcho kind of dude based in British Columbia argues firmly for the capture side of the debate. His name's John Kirk, and he's the president of the British Columbia Scientific Cryptozoology Club, and he's quoted as saying, "I am avowedly on the no-kill side. The notion of killing a possible relative of humans is tantamount to homicide." Now, for the other side of the debate, the writer spoke to a guy called Jim Lansdale, co-founder of the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, who said that killing Bigfoot would be, and I quote, all about shot placement. You'd have to shoot him in the head. You can't body shoot him. They're too big. Sounds really scientific to me.
Yes. I mean, I find it absolutely... For some reason, I'm like appalled by this guy who is thinking about how to shoot Bigfoot, even though I do not believe in Bigfoot at all. But there is just... There is something that is so weird about, like, your instinct immediately, like, knowing that there must be this... If you believe that there is this magnificent beast which lives out there in the wild, your instinct is, right, well, I must kill it then.
Gonna mount its head on my wall.
Presumably, if Bigfoots do exist, then immediately upon their discovery, they would be on the endangered species list, I would imagine, because there must be so few of them for them to have gone unnoticed for so long, or to them to have been... officially unnoticed for so long. There must be an extraordinarily rare species. So you would have thought, or at least I would have hoped, that that would mean that killing them would be illegal.
Well, this is what John Kirk is arguing. But it gets better though, right? Because this Jim Lansdale has apparently starred in a show called Killing Bigfoot on Destination America, which is possibly the most American thing I have ever heard. Not only is it a made-up thing, but they're talking about killing the made-up thing, and they're in America. Of course they are. Yeah. The show follows Lansdale and the rest of his Bigfoot crew as they investigate Bigfoot reports and try to put a bullet in Bigfoot's head.
Why? What's he done?
I just think it's awesome. I want to have a Bigfoot crew. What I liked most about this article, though, is the bit where the two justify their positions, with Kirk, who is against Bigfoot, stating, "Nobody knows in totality what Sasquatch is." He says, "Supposing it does indeed have DNA that indicates that it's a close relative of ours, well, you have a moral quandary there right away. Because if you're going to kill something that shares DNA with humans, by the very definition of the word, you're committing homicide." In response to this, Lansdale argues, and I'm pretty sure he argued it whilst smoking a cigar, he argues that their mission is discovery, and he says, "And by discovery, I mean the only way that scientists will say, yes, this is an animal, is if they have a body. And so that was our mission, to harvest the body and take it to science."
God.
He also says anti-kill researchers just don't understand Bigfoot. And this is a quote. This is brilliant. It gets better and better. This is a quote. He says, "The bleeding hearts, they don't really know about the animal itself. They've got this beat into their head that this is a human type hybrid, and it's not. It's some type of primate that we have. A North American ape that's been here forever. There's people that claim there's only a breeding population, that there are only 2,000 or 3,000. They're not out doing what we do. They're sitting behind a desk. And we're out in the woods." Now, this guy is the first guy to die in the horror movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt.
That makes me angry for various reasons. One, I want to kill this, therefore I must dehumanize it, so therefore you see it as a creature rather than anything you can relate to. So then I can pop it in the head, and then I can get my head above the shelf. That's fine. Right, great. Congratulations. Can I just say as well, Bigfoot stuff, I hate it so much. I have such a... actually, listening to all of that made my blood boil, because cryptids and things like that are fascinating, but there's something about Bigfoot which just needles me to the point where I can't fathom why people like this exist. People who want to go out of their way to find something that somehow lives, and yet... How do they procreate? How many are there? Are they therefore inbred? Is it just one family that's been inbreeding for hundreds of years that just want to be left alone in the forest? You know, it's just, none of this lines up to me. Why is it so big? Why can't we see them? Why aren't there more of them? Why is all footage out of date and out of focus? Why do people think hunting Bigfoot is like hunting deer, where you've got to splash yourself with bloody urine or cover yourself in Kit Kats and hang from a net? It's just, what's the point? Everyone who hunts Bigfoot, I just think, what is the point of you? Right, that's it. I just had to get it off my chest because I hate it.
That was beautiful, Paul.
I've been sitting here finding myself getting annoyed as well, and it's really hard because almost your annoyance is like part of you thinking, well, maybe it is real. And I don't believe that it can, that the Bigfoot really can exist, because an animal of that size just couldn't exist undiscovered for this long in the world in which we live. But I still find that instinct which people have to just go and randomly kill things that they don't, that might be out there, just so appalling that it makes me angry anyway. I really don't think I would get on with this guy one little bit.
And the thing I think that is important to point out is that this thinking isn't unique to America. There are people in the UK who, a number of years ago, I remember a chap setting up an organisation, which is, you know, him and his best friend, probably, who they, in the face of the threat of big cats in the UK, they were basically going out with rifles to look for the big cats to shoot them. So panthers and pumas, which I thought would have been hilarious if they'd actually met one with their little rifle. You know, that's not going to go very well for them. And also in the UK, I remember attending a paranormal conference and a guy was doing a talk, his name's Malcolm Robinson. You may be familiar with him. He's a ghost hunter who isn't very good at what he does. Talks a lot of shit, basically. And he was doing a talk about Loch Ness. He is Scottish. So he was doing a talk about Loch Ness and how he had designed this cage that they were trying to kind of get the money together to build. They were going to put in the lock to then kind of tempt the monster into the cage. And they had needles, basically, in the cage design so that when the Loch Ness monster went into the cage, it would get tranquilized and then they could remove it from the lock and, I don't know, sell it or put it in a zoo somewhere. And I thought that was really horrible. I don't believe in the Loch Ness Monster, but I was outraged on its behalf. I feel like paranormal PETA.
PETA normal.
Animal rights for non-existent animals.
Yes, I know. It's strange how you find yourself having to defend things which you don't actually believe exist.
I can remember leaving the hall where the lecture was happening with my mum and going, how does he know how much tranquilizer will and will not kill the Loch Ness Monster? How does he know how big it is? How does he know that cage isn't going to be big enough? How is he going to transport it? How does he know how much it weighs to have a crane or whatever to move it? And my mum was like, Hayley, the Loch Ness Monster isn't real. And I was like, that doesn't matter in this instance.
It's the principle behind it.
It's the principle, exactly. Yeah. But what amazes me the most about this Jim Lansdale guy is how tough this guy generally seems to think he is, when in reality, he's out in some woods somewhere with a loaded gun chasing shadows.
Get stuffed, Lansdale. Put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I know that this is a really mean thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Do it.
There is something that the Schadenfreude part of my mind absolutely loves those news stories when people are out hunting elephants in Africa and they end up getting trampled and killed by them. I just find it's like natural justice has happened.
Charlie's got a very dark side to him and it's all coming out. But no, it's like when people go to those bull runs where the bulls run down the street before going into the arena and they get gouged by the bulls. It's like,
yeah,
you kind of deserve that actually. It's horrible. It's horrible what's happened to them. But
yeah, you put yourself in this place.
So we're going with the theme of this podcast, where I am apparently a psychic, I predict that Jim Lansdale is going to trip over in a forest and shoot himself. And that's how he's going to die.
Or somebody else on his Bigfoot crew will shoot him thinking that he's Bigfoot, which is actually one of the biggest killers of hunters in America is other hunters.
I hope they open his laptop up and find tons of animal porn. I mean, the odds are good on that one, though, I think.
Oh, my God. That Wow. Okay. So I think we could probably end that there. It's that part of the podcast where we share recommendations for things we think people will be interested in. I'm going to go first. The Lancashire Anomalous Phenomena Investigation Society, or LAPIS for short, are holding their annual conference from the 6th to the 7th of October in St. Anne's. There are some really interesting sounding talks at this conference, so I wish I could go. Peter McHugh is doing a talk on fake news, misreporting the paranormal. And there will be a talk from the Jenny Randalls, titled Time Storms, Near Death Falls and Lying Sources. And also Anne Winspell will be delivering a talk titled The Rise and Fall of Ghost Hunting. And there are loads of others happening over the weekend too. I really like LAPIS. I've been on a sky watch with some of their members. I met them at conferences and so on. And yeah, they're really good people. And I think the conference will be really good. You can check out lapisparanormal.com for more details. That's lapisparanormal.com.
I have a recommendation, absolutely nothing to do with ghosts or the paranormal or anything at all. But this week, this is a podcast recommendation. This week, the wonderful soap Neighbours aired Australia's first ever same-sex marriage, which is actually quite unusual for a soap, which is kind of seen as being a bit socially conservative sometimes. So it was actually quite a big deal for Australia. So I'm going to recommend a Neighbours-based podcast called Fry Gays, named after the gay night at the local bar in Erinsborough, in which two guys talk about the week's events on Neighbours with a bit of an LGBT slant. So that's my recommendation.
I'm going to recommend a friend's book. His name is Jem Roberts, and he's written a book called Soupy Twists about the life of Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie and their career together and how they got started and the subsequent split and what they've been doing since. It's apparently a very good book, and if you're into it, the book is released. It's called Soupy Twists, and next, depending on when this goes out, on the 12th, I'm doing a live show with Jem where we're going to be performing sketches that were never used in a bit of Fry and Laurie and haven't been performed in 22 years.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So this has been another episode of the Spooktator podcast. You can find links to everything that we've discussed at our website, spooktator.co.uk, where you can also find ways of subscribing to the show, leaving reviews and getting in touch with us, including links to our social media accounts. Remember, you can email your comments, suggestions and questions to spooktator@gmail.com. We love receiving emails from you. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, remember, spooky is in the eye of the beholder.